This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
So I'm Adam Thornhill. I'm a programmer, and I have my background in programming and psychology. And what I've been trying to do over the past 15 years is to combine these two fields. So I look at our technical discipline from a psychological perspective.
This is a continuing episode of a series with Adam Thornhill about code as a crime scene. Now let me introduce a special guest.
Hello, my name is Len Gresky. By day, I help large companies improve their effectiveness in their product development.
I tried out CodeScene, and it brought up some things that I hadn't considered before either. One particular thing was it tells you if there's like a last person standing on some part of the code base, and it uses terms of labor risk, if you will, which I know would, of course, would land well with the C-suite as well, because I've had a few clients that have had multiple cases of this situation.
Yeah, that's my experience too. And what usually happens, and this is actually quite dangerous, is that when you have a high staff turnover, and it might not be that people quit, right? It could just be that as a large corporation decide that, okay, let's take this product and move its maintenance to this team, potentially in a different country. What happens then is that the new team quite often consider their code hard to understand, right? And unless they get a proper onboarding, right, and the chance to actually learn and explore the code on their own, they're going to find it really, really challenging. And it's very, very easy to mistake that lack of familiarity for complex code. And then you hear the calls for, hey, we need to rewrite this. And, you know, if you do that, then you will basically solve the wrong problem, because quite often there's nothing wrong with the code. What we lack is familiarity, right? So we will solve the wrong problem unless we have these insights.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, there's a human bias towards reinventing something because what is already in existence and maybe functional is too much cognitive load to understand. And so the reaction is to, well, I could write it differently, so I'll understand.
Well, an unmanaged, you'll see that as, you know, three or four implementations of the same behavior in a code base, where over time different developers have re-implemented it without replacing the original code.
Yeah, nice. Now, you have this term that came up called software engineering intelligence. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, sure. So software engineering intelligence, to me basically means that there is more about software than just code. And I think that if we want to make decisions around software, if we want to really, really succeed with software at scale, then we need to understand several different factors that go beyond source code. So the source code itself is super important. It really is. We just talked about this financial impact, right? But it's also important, as we also discussed, to have a good familiarity with the code inside the team. So that's another factor. It's also vital to have teams that are well aligned with the way our software evolves and what our software architecture supports. So that is another aspect. And then finally, we want to make sure that we have strong delivery practices. And software engineering intelligence is the space where you can get this 360 view of all these aspects at once, so that we can make decisions based on actual data rather than gut feelings.
Is this made visible in maybe CodeScene, or what tool are you describing here?
Yeah, almost like a coincidence, this is what CodeScene does. So that was what I attempted to do with Your Code is Crime Scene, to help us get insights into all these different factors. And that's basically what we're trying to build with CodeScene, to give you this 360 overview of any software project.
Oh, nice. It's Your Code as a Crime Scene, this book, and its subtitle is Use Forensic Techniques to Arrest Defects, Bottlenecks, and Bad Design in Your Programs. It's a It's from Pragmatic Programmer is the publisher, and there's an edition 2024. So it's just about, you know, a new edition's coming out. Your book describes design principles, one of which is use beauty as a guiding principle. Can you tell us about that principle?
Yeah, sure. I will try. So basically, I took a lot of inspiration from various fields of psychology. And in this particular case, I got very inspired by the psychology of attractiveness. Because it's if you read that line of research, you find that beautiful people, when you actually study it scientifically, it turns out that beauty is nothing but average, right? And but it's not average in the sense of being common, right? Rather, it's about having a face with the mathematical average, right? So average features, which is a rare thing. And what I found so fascinating about that is that we always think that beauty is... let me see how to phrase this. It's more like, you know, beauty is something rare that you have. But it turns out that beauty is actually the absence of something. It's the absence of ugliness. And once I learned about that, I thought that's a definition we can use to reason about code too. So to me, beauty in code is simply code that is free of these ugly, ugly constructs. And ugly constructs in code would be anything that increases our cognitive load. So it could be things like deep nesting structures, right? Overly complex logical expressions, large methods, those type of things. So beautiful code to me is code without that ugliness. Or longer complicated explanation, sorry for that.
Okay, so beauty is the absence of ugliness. I really like that. I've never heard of that. I didn't know there was a definition that someone put together. I thought that was a really courageous thing to choose because beauty, I think, is very difficult to define, but I like what you've done there. Now, can you describe a situation where you've seen or you yourself have written some beautiful code? How did its beauty contribute to its economics?
Yeah, so I like to think that beautiful code, the way it contributes to the economics of software is that when you really, really pull it off, what happens is that you save a lot of time when trying to understand that code. And trying to understand that code is something that we have to do over and over as software engineers, because most of the code we write isn't done, right? It's code that we're going to return to at some point in time. And it turns out that where we as developers spend most of our time is not in writing code. It's about understanding existing code so that we can safely make modifications to it. And beautiful code, you know, with the absence of ugliness, is something that contributes a lot to our code reading skills. It makes it so much easier to read healthy, beautiful code. So that's how it contributes. And I've seen several examples on that. But one thing that really, really stands out is feature I worked on maybe 15 years ago in my career. And it was a system that had a really, really complex feature. And once we started to investigate that feature, it turned out that that feature was actually inherited from the previous version of that system, which had a very different hardware platform from the 1980s. And that hardware platform actually had physical relays. And these relays had to be exercised at regular intervals so that they don't stick together. And this feature had that purpose, right? So once we understood that, we understood that this feature is completely obsolete on the new hardware, right? So we can just delete it. And to me, the most beautiful code is the code that doesn't add at all to our cognitive load, right? So deleting code is always a good thing. And what was so nice about that was that once we could really understand the domain and get rid of this feature, we simplified the whole system also for the end users because they didn't need to get exposed to this feature anymore, right? So we reduce the cognitive load on our end users too. So I like to think that that's the most beautiful refactoring and improvement ever. We'd probably deleted 20,000 lines of code.
Wow. Okay, there we are. Nice. As a coach, one of the aspects I enjoy teaching developers, something that's very unexpected to them, is to, when they have a stand-up meeting, speak clearly to how much code they got rid of that day, because we're trying to create an aesthetic or a situation where you should be proud that you deleted some code. You should be proud that you made this function 30% smaller, or and talk about that to your team. Because a lot of people have the opposite feeling. They have the opposite that there's a danger in deleting code, which of course there's always a little bit of, there's always risk in changing code, whether it's a deletion or an add. But to create this social system where people should like look for that achievement of deleting something that wasn't there and being proud about it and then telling the rest of the team, look, I deleted some code. And as a coach, I would be there in that stand up. And then of course, if people like freaked out, I would try to like, you know, we'd have a conversation about why that's actually healthy. But that's something I try to instill in teams. So that's really, I'm thankful to hear you speak to that. That's nice.
So how do you deal with the cognitive dissonance of people get rewarded for writing more code, not getting rid of code?
I think that in those situations, they're maybe not so uncommon as they should be, but in those situations, the reward mechanics are off, because I don't think that more lines of code has any intrinsic value to a company. More capabilities or better capabilities might have, right? If we can achieve that with less code, then we're all better off. So I think those are very important conversations to have.
Agile Thoughts wants your help. However you find our show, be it through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of the other podcast aggregation systems, go ahead and leave us a review. Click some stars, and that will help us grow the show. Thank you. Check out the show notes. And in there, you will see links to the several books that Adam Tornhill is an author of about code and design. And also, you'll find links to other things such as Adam's talk at GoTo and his TEDx talk. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for your easy tapping. If you don't use a podcast player, well, go back to the website where you downloaded this MP3, and there you will see the show notes. The first of the series started in episode 261. So if you're like my friend Zoe, you can find that episode by going back to the Agile Thoughts website at agilethoughts.info. And there you will find a search box where you can type in any episode number that you desire. And it will find it. Next episode, more Adam Tornhill.
So what hotspots do is that they help us identify the most critical parts of the code base. And they work by doing something I call behavioral code analysis. So what I do here is that I'm not just looking at the code. I'm also looking at how are we as developers interacting with the code we're building.